Over in Matthew chapter 21, we'll pick up where we left off last week. Actually, we're going to break into a new segment of this chapter, beginning in verse 23 in Matthew chapter 21. It says, "And when he was come into the temple, the chief priest and the elders of the people came unto him as he was teaching and said, By what authority dost thou these things? And who gave thee this authority? And Jesus answered and said unto them, I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things." Here's his question. The baptism of John, whence was it? From heaven or of men? And they reasoned with themselves, saying, If we shall say from heaven, he will say unto us, Why did ye not then believe him? But if we say of men, we fear the people, for all hold John as a prophet. And they answered and said unto Jesus, We cannot tell. And he answered unto them, and he says, Neither tell I you by what authority I do these things. Now let me just remind you that it's still the Passover week in Jerusalem. We've talked about this over the last several times we've been together. Once again, Jesus has made his way to the temple. If you'll remember, he and many of the other people that have come to the holy city for the Passover week, Passover festival, stay outside the city walls. There's not enough room within the city, and so Jesus is staying somewhere around the area of Bethany, right outside of Jerusalem. He gets up in the morning. This is the second morning in a row that we've seen this. He comes into town and goes to the temple like many people do. Because all the people, the Jewish people from all over the various regions had made this pilgrimage to Jerusalem for this Passover, the most important spiritual holiday of the year for the Jew. Because of that, there would have been an unusual amount of people, not only in Jerusalem, but within the temple. Verse 23 tells us that Jesus that morning had begun to teach. Now, there's no doubt that many people already knew his reputation, had seen much of his miracles, heard much of his teaching and all of this, and so they've gathered around to hear him speak, likely hundreds, if not very more likely thousands of people. The temple was very large. Have probably gathered around hearing his teaching. They've assembled to hear what he's got to say. And of course, the very jealous religious leaders took note of the attention he's given, and they already don't like him. And so they confront him. They come together and they confront him with this question. Before we get to that question and talk about it, let's talk a little bit about the group of leaders that was there and who was likely in that particular group that was confronting Jesus. First of all, it says in verse 23, the chief priest and the elders of the people, okay? So it says specifically those are there. We know that the Pharisees are there because if you look across the page at verse 45, it says, and when the chief priest and the Pharisees had heard his parables, they perceived that he spake of them. And so we know the Pharisees are there. If you were to look at Luke chapter 20, which is a parallel passage to this, verse 1 would tell us that the scribes were there. And so we're getting an idea of what this group is. Now, because it was such a serious confrontation that was taking place here, and the fact that it was taking place right within the temple, there's a very good chance that some of the very higher-up religious leaders would have been there. Perhaps the captain of the temple makes sense because it's within the temple. He would have been the second highest religious leader in Jerusalem, religious official or whatever. He may have been there, likely was. Even the top official, the high priest, could have been there and been present. Besides that, because Jesus was such a threat to the authority of all the whole religious establishment, all of them, there's a very good chance that some of the other groups were there. The Sadducees are not mentioned, but they make their appearances here and there. They could have been there. The Herodians, the Essenes, the Zealots. Now we've talked about each of them at different times. We won't go into, but these are different religious sects, S E CTS, groups of religious people. Very possible that they were all there because each of those groups, they had their own differences, okay? They didn't see eye to eye, and they normally were disputing with one another, but we've seen it before, and we'll likely see it here. Their common ground right now was Jesus, because he was a threat to all of them. He was a threat to the establishment in general, okay? And so there's really no telling who all might have been there that would have been involved with this inquiry, but it's likely a great many of them, okay? Whatever the case is, they've got a question for him. They want him to answer this question. And they say in the second part of verse 23, "By what authority dost thou these things?" Now, what things are they talking about? Well, we have to remember that just yesterday, if you will, Jesus had very dramatically cleansed the temple, okay? He'd come in there. If you'll remember earlier in this chapter, he had overturned the tables of the money changers. He had expelled all the vendors who had set up shop there. We talked about that. It had almost become a bit of a bazaar that they had put together there in the temple and under the guise of spiritual, because the Passover was a great opportunity for them to peddle things and make their money, okay? And so there were concessions and everything else. And so Jesus has come in, and he's sent them packing. He's turned over the tables. And in fact, I thought it's something at the end of verse 12 there. It says, "And the seats of them that sold doves." So he's even throwing the chairs that they're sitting in out. He's really draining the swamp, as it were, and he did it very authoritatively. You think about it, the confidence and the assertiveness that Jesus must have been using, that these people are obeying him. He's not a temple official. He's not, an assistant to the high priest. He's just Jesus. He's just a man from Nazareth, okay? And he's coming in there, and he's doing this with such authority that they're listening to him. They're clearing out. Now let's back up to that text in verse 12. We'll read it again. "And Jesus went into the temple of God, and he cast out all that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. And he said unto them, It is written, My house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves." Okay? So he's come into the temple. He's done that. I'm sure that's some of why they're asking this question the next day. Okay? Then immediately upon cleansing the temple, people began to flock to him, bringing their lame and their infirmed people. Verse 14 says, "And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple." Okay, so following the cleansing, then people began to bring their sick and blind people to him. And then on top of that, notice verse 15. It says, "And when the chief priests and the scribes saw the wonderful things that he did," they're seeing these miracles he's performing and healing these people, "and they also saw the children crying in the temple and saying, Hosanna to the Son of David, and they were sore displeased." Okay, so you've got the temple cleansing, you got people being healed within the temple at his voice. Then you have children singing praises to him and all of this. And so it says there at the end of verse 15 that they were sore displeased. So if they were sore displeased yesterday over those things, then you know today in our text that we're reading that they're still very stirred up, especially because now, as this text tells us, he's teaching. He's now drawn the crowds and is teaching them. And by teaching in the temple, essentially he was doing the job of what a rabbi would do. And they take offense to that because rabbis in those days were typically ordained to be so. Okay, you didn't just come along and be a rabbi. They, after a time of apprenticeship and learning at the feet of another great religious rabbi of some kind, that particular rabbinical candidate would be approved and ordained, if you will, by the Sanhedrin, which was the highest Jewish council, okay? They would, so this was, this once that was done, once that person had gone through their apprenticeship and trained and learned and then approved and ordained by the Sanhedrin, then they would have been considered a official rabbi, a elder, and a judge, okay, with the authority to teach wherever they went. This, all of these things, they were even, it was, as I was reading this, I discovered that they were even put in a position as to serve as judges in the sense that they could render verdicts in religious matters when different things were brought to them, and even had some authority over civil matters. And so really, being a rabbi in the eyes of the religious establishment was a big deal. It was a very prestigious position. It was weighty in the eyes of the religious world. And here you have Jesus coming in after what he did yesterday and all they saw there, and now you've got him coming in today and sitting down and teaching with this great authority all these people that have gathered around him, okay? And so he's doing this without any kind of official recognition as a rabbi. He wasn't licensed, if you will. He wasn't certified. He hadn't passed the bar, so to speak. He's just Jesus teaching. And they take tremendous offense to that. All of these things that we've just talked about from yesterday and today are probably taken in consideration and has caused them to come together as a group and challenge him by asking him this question: what authority, by what authority are you doing these things, okay? Essentially, they're saying, who gave you the authority to come in here and do all these things? And if there's anything that would characterize what Jesus did from start to finish, by the way, with his ministry, it was authority. Everything he did with authority. Not arrogance. Not in a way that was overbearing and dictatorial or anything of that nature, but he did it with a confidence and assertiveness and an authoritative mentality. And it was always those things that made him so impressive to the people. He was gentle in spirit, but authoritative in his power. And so when he healed somebody or cast out demons, it was with authority. It wasn't asked with a question, will you leave, demon? He was told to leave, and he left. And he did it with 100% success. He never failed. And so this kind of authority and this kind of success was what had really gained him, in a lot of ways, so much of his following. He taught in such a way, with such authority, that even the hearers, they were so in awe, wondering that how can this untrained, unlearned, uneducated man from Nazareth, how can he come along and be able to teach like this? They were perplexed. When he cleansed the temple, as we just read about, he did it with such authority in such a way that the people obeyed him. I mean, he cleaned that place out, and just as one man. And there again, clearing out the riffraff, and they stayed out from what we can tell, because here he is the next day, and there's no record of him having to send any more out. Word got around, I think, okay? And so even when he raised the dead, you remember when he raised Lazarus, he says, Lazarus, come forth. He didn't have to say it a second time. Lazarus came forth. It is all done with authority. And even, he's even got the power and the authority to lay down his life, in other words, allow himself to be crucified, and then take it up again, allow himself to be resurrected. That's the kind of authority he had even over his own life. And so everything he did was with authority, but yet he never once sought the approval of human authority. He never did. He completely ignored their system. And everything in that religious system was about power and authority, and who was who in that system, and how you could get there, and so as he ignored that system and did just what he was going to do as the Son of God, that was seen as scandalous to them, audacious for a man to come in and do this sort of thing. And you would think that they would have been sensible enough to see what he was doing and recognize that, hey, He has some kind of an authority, and it must be coming from God. That you would think that that's what they would deduce. But instead, the best thing they could come up with is that it was coming from the devil. He's doing all these good things in the name of the devil. It didn't make sense. But when you got your hackles up and you're out after someone, usually you don't listen to reason. And so as the day of his crucifixion is quickly approaching, it's not going to be long, things are beginning to come to a boil with the religious leaders, and they have him in their sights. He's in the crosshairs, if you will. And he knows this, okay? He's just, multiple times we've read where he's telling his disciples, the time's coming, you know, they're going to kill me, and I'm going to be raised on the third day. So he knows it's all coming, and he's not alarmed about it, okay? He knows it's going to happen, and he's ready to face it, and he's going to face it with the same authority that he faced and did everything else. And it's only an authority that can come from the Father. And so he comes to them. They come to him with this question: by what authority do you do these things? And who gave you that authority was their question. And so he comes to them with a question of his own. Verse 24 says, "And Jesus answered and said unto them, I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I and likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things." Here's the question. The baptism of John, whence was it? From heaven or of men? Now, this is a question, folks. Jesus is not trying to be evasive. He has no reason to be evasive. He's just very wisely putting them in a position to have to explain themselves, okay, in front of these crowds, because this has happened in the public. This has happened, well, in the temple, but the public gathering in the temple. The crowds are hearing this, and all along, as you know, as we've studied, Jesus has made it a point to unveil the hypocrisy and the deceitfulness of these religious leaders. He said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. He's told them time and time again that these religious Jews around us, you got to watch them, okay? And he's tried to help the Jewish people see through the facade of the establishment. And so this question to them and their failure to respond to this question serves that purpose, to show the people around him what these people really are. So in the second part of verse 25, it says, "And they reasoned with themselves, saying, if we shall say from heaven, he will say unto us, why did you not believe him? But if we shall say of men, we fear the people, for all hold John as a prophet." Now, what's taking place there, it's pretty simple and self-explanatory. They're thinking to themselves, first of all, Jesus, when he refers to the baptism of John, essentially he's referring to the entire ministry of John. John's big part of his ministry was baptizing those that had repented of their sins, okay? But by using that phrase, baptism of John, it's really a reference, the ministry of John, which one, and he begins to ask the question. John was, in fact, a prophet, the last prophet on record, if you will. If there were other prophets that God didn't call attention to, so be it. But as according to the scripture, John was really the last Old Testament, last prophet from Old Testament times, let's put it that way. He preached and he prophesied and he baptized before Jesus began his ministry here on earth. And so he was doing the job that Old Testament prophets had done. There's no doubt that he was sent from God. And none of us have to question that. We know that. But as they had rejected Jesus here in this text and all the way through the book, they also had rejected John. This religious group had, this religious establishment. Great masses of the populace had flocked to John. They saw John. John was the Billy Graham of the day, if you will, and greater, by the way, because he was more even than Billy Graham. And the people saw him as that. They saw him as a prophet. And people by the thousands flocked to him out in the country and to hear what he had to say. They embraced John and they embraced his ministry and they embraced what he taught. And so now that that general populace holds John in that kind of esteem, and for Jesus to ask this question to the Pharisees in front of all these people, he's put them in quite a dilemma. Because if they say that John was a man sent from God, like he was, then Jesus is going to say to them, then why weren't you guys following him like everybody else was? Why didn't you listen to his preaching? Why didn't you get baptized after you repented? Okay? But they didn't. They didn't follow John, and they didn't embrace John and his preaching. Okay? So if they answered that way, it would clearly leave them looking foolish. If John was a man of God, a prophet of God, why didn't you guys follow him? They would have looked very foolish. And so they couldn't answer that way in front of the temple crowd. On the other hand, if they declared that John the Baptist was a man with a man ordained, he was a man, but a man with a man ordained ministry, if they'd have said that, then that would stir up the ire of the people around because they held him as a prophet. And so really and truly, as you see the great wisdom in Jesus asking this question, he's revealing their hypocrisy. He's revealing their inability. You know, this time of year we see lots of politicians in their interviews, and they'll be point blank ask a question, point blank ask a question, and they'll answer every question but that question because they know that if they answer this way, it's going to mess them up with these constituents, and if they answer the other way, it's going to mess, and so they avoid it altogether. Okay, well, that's what they were doing here, just trying to dodge the question, and they'd been straddling the fence with John the Baptist ever since he came on the scene. And his ministry. They had very delicately avoided the subject for long enough. And Jesus is pushing the envelope here and trying to put them on spot and see if they would give an answer. And of course they will not, because verse 27 tells us, "And they answered Jesus and said, we cannot tell. And he said unto them, neither tell I you by what authority I do these things." And so that kind of winds it up. And Jesus has once again, he stumped them. And that just puts a little more gasoline on the fire with these people that are out to get him anyway. And we're just a few days away from his crucifixion now. And, of course, that will be over the next several chapters. But it's just a few days in actual time. Okay? So appreciate you guys. We'll go ahead and stand and be dismissed. Remember, if there's any two of you that could work that 1 hour on Saturday, all you have to do is be there and just kind of observe the kids and make sure the money's not going out and where it shouldn't go and that the money's coming in. And Cooper and Bergen will be in and out and around to kind of help out if you need them. So if two people can sign up, it's on the back table, okay? Appreciate you guys so much. Randy Roberts, will you lead us in prayer, please?